Let's get started. I'd like to welcome everyone to the regular session of the July 16th, 2024 City Council meeting. I'm Mayor Brian Horrocks, and I'd like to welcome everyone that's visiting. We'll start with a turning time over to Suzette Jackson for our Pledge of Allegiance and our thought or prayer.
Thank you. I think we are very lucky to be able to have Krish Thada give our opening prayer. And just a little bit about Krish. He is on our North Salt Lake City Youth Council and is scheduled to be honored tonight. So that's really fun that he'll get double. I'm sure every teenage boy wants more public recognition, but just to brag on him for just a moment, Krish is going to be a senior this year, and he is a 4.0 student, and he's on schedule to graduate with his associates from Weber State University, along with his high school diploma, which is so commendable. He is clearly a hard worker and has been giving back into our community through the Youth Council, which I love because, again, not every teenage boy is thinking about giving back to his community. And so what a great attribute. So I would love to invite Krish to come up and open us with prayer, and then we will say the pledge.
Blessedly that this meeting will go smooth, there will be no problems. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen. Amen.
Please join me with the pledge.
Thank you. Next item is citizen comment. These can address items not on our agenda. Please come forward, state your name and address, and
there we go. Okay, thanks. Hello, Mayor and Council members. My name is Michael Lambert, and first off, I was wondering if I could have a piece of cake. Is that? I'm just kidding. But I am a Layton resident, and I'll be very brief. But I'm running as an unaffiliated bipartisan candidate for Davis County Commission, and I'm trying to make the rounds and meet the various city leadership, understand city issues that are going on. I'm running as an unaffiliated bipartisan candidate in part because I'm concerned about the increasing divisiveness and polarization in our politics that has been developing over the last number of years. And I believe that there's a lot of common ground, and in my experience in running, that's renewed my hope as I've met people across the aisle for that. Just a little bit about me. I'm a professional. I'm a social worker, a licensed clinical social worker. I've worked with young people and families for my career. As I mentioned, I'm in Layton, serve on our school community council, have a young family there, co-chaired that council, like volunteering in the schools, care a lot about mental health and behavioral health, how that impacts our young people, care about issues impacting our aging population, as well as just trying to represent all residents here in our county. And sometimes when we get to general elections in the county, there's no more choices at that point. So I'm excited for the election this November. I care about conservation issues and balancing that with sustainable growth in our area, the Great Salt Lake, air quality. And I just really look forward to meeting more people, getting to know you. I know the county and the cities do their own things in a lot of different ways, but there is some overlap, and I'm a big believer in building relationships. So thanks for your time and any of the North Salt Lake residents that are listening today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing you'll discover is we're not perfect in Davis County, but boy, we work together well in a lot of ways. So, anyone else?
Turn to green, right? Okay. So we, both Kyle and I presented last month in the working session, and we became aware that some of our words were hurtful and used against a committee member, our chair, to tell him that he was not running the committee well. And this actually greatly pained us as Trails, as committee members, and we want to just emphatically apologize to Jeff and to correct on the public record that the comments that we were making were similar to what Ken was making with the scattered things that we have to cover on PTAR. It is difficult to cover the things that are needed for, and I'll say trails, but I think Camille can stand up and say arts. I think most of us can stand up and say most things we cover very lightly. But we'd like to just make sure that we correct that record and apologize to Jeff, because we understand that was used against him. And that is not what our intent was. It's not what we wanted to even have that be remembered for, but we did want to make sure that the trails, it is something that we can use to make, to improve the lives of our citizens. So, did you?
Sorry, Jeff. Love you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. For what it's worth, I didn't pick that up at all, but we sure appreciate all of our citizens and on the committees and all they do. Anyone else? Stanley?
Stan Porter, 360 East Sycamore Grove Lane. The reason I came tonight is just noticed on the agenda they have the list of activities, and I see Getting the Rivers on there. But it hasn't been published out on the website at all, so I was a little concerned that maybe we're dropping it or something. So that was really my reason for being here. And, of course, you didn't even get into the activities. But I certainly hope that I plan on going forward with that activity, because it's been a great one for 10 years so far. And I just would encourage you to keep it up, and hopefully we start getting something published out there if it's going to go forward, so people will know about it.
Based on last year, we need to advertise it less.
Well, and maybe that's the reason that, or just get a lot more canoes, or have more, have two river runs. I did run the river last week, and or last Saturday, I guess, and it needs a little cleanup. You know, we used to. Commission used to run a cleanup day, and could use a little work. There's a lot of stuff that's backed up in different spots, and and I think maybe I'll have to find out if I can run down there and get it. So I was telling these guys, I saw the little chainsaws they have now that are portable and they're battery operated, and I thought that'd work great on the river. Just go down there and cut those lower limbs off, and the garbage will float right down. You don't have to even really pick it out, as long as you can keep it going down the river. There's the big trash boom just on the other side of Center Street. So the whole idea is once you get it floating in the river, it'll clean itself in a sense. So anyway, that was my comments on that. And I like the discussions on the committees. I think of going back to the time when we started the committees. And maybe some of you don't know the history of it, but went to a training up in Park City on the different colors of personalities. You know, you got your red, your green, your blue, and you know, I went to the meeting, and I, you know, it was kind of interesting. But then we decided we'd form these committees, and so we had a big meeting. We actually met over at the hotel, so we get a lot bigger room, and we invited all the people that looked like they wanted to be active in the community, and we had a training on the different colors. And it was great. And I learned a lot. It was life-changing for me because all of a sudden I could see these different colors of personalities coming out. And it was a training on how to work together and how people don't necessarily think all the same way, you know. And we don't have to let the reds take over and just run everything, you know. If you're a blue personality, the idea is to try to mix all those personalities together, but everybody's usually a little stronger on one or the other. And it was a really nice training. And from that, we formed the committees right there. And some of them took off and some of them didn't, you know, and some of them didn't last long. And they seem to go and have that flow. You know, you can get them really pumped up and people do a lot. And then all of a sudden they kind of get a little less interested, or somebody driving it, you know, seems to back off a little bit. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Stan.
Jeff and Camille, I don't want to force citizen comment, but you might have a report on our discussion on Get to the River, if you'd like.
I think Sherry wants to say something on it, too. Yeah. I just want to say I'm a white, but I wish I was a yellow.
I just want to let you know that, yes, we absolutely are planning on it. Allie is right now working with Linda and with Carmen to see if we can use the rec scheduling program to actually schedule places in the boats, because it would be great to be able to have people pre-register so that we have the right amount of boats. Last year, a difficulty was we had to do two runs, but the company that we were renting the boats for, they weren't really signed up to do two runs, and so they weren't exactly happy that they kind of had to do that. And so we're trying to figure out how to get people pre-registered, but all the boats have different number of people. And so if we can figure out how many boats we have, and if this one holds two adults and one child, or if we can have them sign up for spots in the boats so that we are more prepared. But we absolutely have already scheduled and reserved the boats, and we have scheduled the food truck for the waffles. So we are on it, and you'll see the advertisement within the next week or so, I think.
So that's a great idea, but you're going to have to plan on some people just showing up.
We will still plan on that, but if we can get the word out to get as many people pre-registered as possible, it would be very helpful for the logistics.
Okay, Camille?
Okay, more boats and more donuts. I remember we were going through those pretty fast. Suzette, was there something else you wanted me to say? Camille Thorpe, 80 North Main Street. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Stan Porter. He was the one that asked me to get involved 10 years ago, but he called it the Arts, Parks, and Trails Committee. He led with arts, and I just took him for it. And it's been great. Tonight, I wanted to just give you an art note that came to mind while we were just talking about arts. And I appreciate that I'm associated with the arts, but I really hope that I'm associated with trails and parks as well. For instance, the JZN logo on the side of this building across the street originally was going to be a clock, and I talked Stan out of it. I said, Stan, that's so cliche. Let's put some art up there. And now there's not a clock, and now there's a company logo there, and that's essentially our entrance to one of our entrances to the city. So I'd love it if we can talk to JZN about giving that back sometime so that we could do some art there. Tonight I'm going to go a little light on the trees and a little heavier on the traffic. So on the notes on the trees, I just thought I would follow the breadcrumbs that our architects left about previous parks that they've designed, that are designing Hatch Park, the one in Magna and the one in South Jordan. So just for interest's sake, the scale of those, well, let me just first start with the trees. That in South Jordan, it was an asphalt pit, so there was no mitigating trees in that park. It's a beautiful new park, but there was no need to do that. And in Magna, that's a newer park too, and there's no mitigating mature trees in that park either. And the scale of those parks, Magna's like 62 acres, I think. Welby or South Jordan's in that range too. And our park is currently, help me out here, 12 acres, and maybe if we double it, it's 24. So it seems like we're trying to squeeze a lot of stuff into our cute little Hatch Park, which, by the way, if you read the 427 reviews on the site, what people have to say about Hatch Park, I think that could inform a lot of things about what people like about that park and would like to still have. But anyway, the scale of it is that we have a cute little park, and it's going to be bigger, and it's going to be wonderful. But I'm going to just lean a little heavy on, again, talking to our architects about finding some of those trees that could be that could create place and that could, you know, create a mature park and not just a new thing that looks just like the drawing. Okay. Traffic. I'm going to end on traffic, and I just wonder if there's anything we can do about the speed on Main Street. It's become frightening for me to cross the street. I have to tell you, cars go really fast, and it seems like they want to gun it right at my house. And I won't flag down another driver, I promise, because the last one turned around, and I won't do it. But I would like to see if there's a traffic calming measure, perhaps as Hatch gets redesigned, maybe those industrial height lights could come down and maybe create more of a cozy Main Street, that maybe that could help with traffic calming. Those are my comments tonight. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Ken, I know we've looked at speed bumps before, and I always use the excuse of snow plowing, but my mom lives right above Wasatch in Salt Lake, and so they seem to function okay with their speed bumps. I don't know.
I will look at this. I think in our city we've used our message boards pretty effectively, I personally think the speed sign on Center Street traveling west that tells you how fast you're going and will blink and flash if you're speeding. I see more of those in where I live and all around, and they are pretty effective. But there's no question we could do better speed enforcement. And so that would probably be my first step, is to increase our speed enforcement on Main Street before we would turn to something like speed bumps. So thank you for that.
All right, thank you. Next item is please.
Hi, Jeff Skroger. I'm at 652 Canterbury Lane. Sorry, I had to remember that. All of you are much more experienced and knowledgeable about sort of city infrastructures and things. So I wanted to comment on would be helpful about what was discussed at the work meeting. I'm on the PTAR committee with Camille and Peter and Kyle and a few other people. And I think something that we all have in common is we want to do work for our community. We want to do things in our community, be involved and be a part of how our community functions and help our community to function. I think there's a lot of people in North Salt Lake that share that feeling. And I think it might be helpful to look at the population of North Salt Lake, this might sound cynical, as an asset. And you know, the way you look at the $120,000 we get from the extra, you know, sales tax revenue, look at the citizens as assets and think of, and you can divide the groups however you in your expertise you feel is right, but just be aware that, you know, if you create groups, I think people will come to those groups and people will be involved. Some of the discussion came up about the kind of the food truck nights and the heritage nights, and I think a lot of those happen because people in groups show up to help those happen. And that's part of what I think demonstrates kind of the citizens we have, is that I hate that I'm quoting this movie. I don't like this movie at all. But if you build it, they will come. You know, I think if you set up the committees and you decide however you think is in your best interest and however you think the city is best at allocating its resources, I think the citizens who are the resources will come and want to help. So, also, I just want to encourage that we make sure. I agree also. I think that it would help to have to not have the sort of administrative requirements of having city council approval of new members. And I think perhaps figuring out ways to maybe loosen the quorum requirements. I'm not sure. But I do think we have to be mindful of the public. I mean, you're all Lisa, you're an attorney as well. We have to be mindful of these public meeting laws that apply to us in the state of Utah. So sometimes we may or may not be able to do those things, but maybe within the bounds of the law, I think that's a good idea as well. So so that's my comment, basically. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Cheers. Okay. Anyone else? No? Let's go on to the next item. Presentation of the Youth City Council Scholarships Awards. And I'm going to turn this over to Tam.
Okay, I am going to introduce the Audrey and Enos Beebe, who are the adult leaders over the Youth Council. But I wanted to say something first. I have the privilege of being the council member that represents for them, and being with the youth, they meet every Tuesday. So that was a question that was brought up in the earlier meeting. So every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, and it's hard for me to get there all the time, but one of the things I do like to try to get to is the day that they distribute food at the apartments down by Lee's. And I think the reason I like that the best is because it is fun to see how kind our youth council is to everybody. And a lot of those people don't speak very good English, and they help them take that food to their homes. And it is good for my heart to see that we have amazing young people in our city, but that we also have youth that are willing to lead and are gonna take our city and wherever they go onto great heights. The other thing is they're kind to each other. There is all kinds of personalities in that youth council, and they are friends with everybody, and they include everybody, and it is a privilege and an honor to be able to serve with them. So I'll turn the time over to Audrey and Enos.
Hello, we are excited to be here tonight. The North Salt Lake Youth City Council is run by the youth, not by Enos and I. It's primarily run by an executive committee, which is made up of a mayor, a city manager, a recorder, and four committee chairpersons. They plan, they execute, they organize, and they oversee all the activities, guest speakers, field trips, and service projects. As an executive committee, they set parameters to qualify for the scholarships that we're awarding tonight. The four candidates being recognized tonight were excellent in their efforts.
We'd like to talk for just a second about each of them. So if we can have Chris Thoda come up first. I don't even have to wait for him to come up. He's tall enough, you'll probably see him coming. But Chris Thoda was our recorder this past year. We've already heard probably a little bigger synopsis of him than I was even going to give, but I would agree with all of the comments that were made earlier about him. He's a diligent, hard worker all the time. He's fully committed to not just our youth committee, but to the community as a whole, and is a great representative of it. As the recorder, he helped keep us organized this past year, tracking attendance, both weighted and straight attendance, which were used to qualify for our leadership conference in Logan in the spring, and to qualify for scholarships and new executive committee positions for the new year. He also filled in whenever needed and did an excellent job in that in any leadership role that we gave him. So much so that he was offered the position and will be serving as our youth council mayor, as you guys already heard, and has been doing a great job in the short term he's had as that so far. He is being awarded a $200 scholarship this evening.
Peyton Otis was our activity committee's chairperson. She is unable to be with us this evening, but just a little bit about her. She is energetic, organized, and a born leader. She led her committee in planning and organizing activities that brought our youth council together and helped to form bonds that were apparent as we served and interacted with the community. She is being awarded a $200 scholarship this evening.
Okay.
Kirstina Stanger was our city manager. She was also unable to be with us tonight. But Kirstina worked together with Alina, our city mayor, and other members of the executive committee to ensure that all responsibilities were being met and that everyone on the council had all the information they needed. She was a valuable part of the executive committee this past year. She did a great job of communicating with each person and making sure they stayed on their tasks and were getting them completed. She is being awarded a $400 scholarship.
And our final award this evening is for Alina Smith. Alina Smith served as our mayor this past year. She is decisive, and she has a talent for gathering and making our group feel very cohesive. Alina led each planning meeting, made assignments, and followed up on the execution to ensure our success. For her excellent service this past year, and she will be very missed, Alina is being awarded an $800 scholarship tonight. Thank you very much.
Before you sit down, I've got some certificates to hand out, so let's have the two come up that are here. We have a great youth city council, and we have great advisors. And I wasn't able to go to Logan this year, and as I saw this on the agenda, I had regret again that I missed that. Okay, our next item is my appointing a new planning commissioner. And sorry, I'm going to get to that.
Yes.
So the our applicant that we've selected is Jonathan Marsh. And John, would you come forward and tell us a little bit about yourself?
John Marsh, 3879 South, 775 West, / Sycamore Avenue. I'm excited to be joining the Planning Commission with the encouragement of some of y'all, as well as some of the staff, and appreciate your consideration, Mayor, and look forward to working with staff and with Ken and y'all. I'm a computer engineer. I work for a defense contractor. I'm also a real estate investor and have a few rental properties. In full disclosure, my wife is also the city planner for Holiday, which is where some of my boot camp into planning and zoning comes from, in helping her get a master's degree at the University of Utah recently. I think that's about it. Is there any questions?
As I reviewed John's resume, it was very impressive, and we had some good candidates that we chose from, and he was the recommendation that I have and the staff has, and I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve Mayor Horak's recommended appointment of John Marsh to the Planning Commission for the remainder of the term for seat 4, which expires on January 1st, 2025.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Welcome, John, and we'll put you to work.
Perfect. Thank you. Look forward to it.
Thank you.
I do have a comment. John and Peter are a really good example of what the city gained by annexing that area of that unincorporated area. We've got these excellent citizens that are ready to step up and get involved and really add to what we are in North Salt Lake. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Welcome, John.
Thanks. Okay, next item is appointments to the golf committee. And I've spoken to both Council Member Baskin and Court, and they both agree to continue to serve on this committee. Grateful for their efforts, and I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve Mayor Horak's recommended appointments to the Golf Course Oversight Committee of Corey Markasich to fill seat 2 and the reappointments of Lisa Watts Baskin to fill seat 1 and Court Hewis to fill seat 4, all expiring on March 1st, 2028.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I did fail to mention Corey also now, so thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed there? Thank you. Our next item is consideration of resolution 2024-26R, a resolution supporting the application to Discovery Davis for the installation of mural utilizing the 2024 mural grant program and authorizing the matching funds. Sherry?
We are excited to make application, and as part of that application, it requires a resolution to support that from the City Council with the matching funds. We are going to request $10,000, and our match would be $10,000 for that. The Davis County Council, they did extend the deadline, but they haven't told us how long they were extending it for, so we still have time. Some of the things that we went through as we were working on this application, at first we thought we had to have the design and we have to have the artist. We don't necessarily have to do that. If you have it, it gives more weight to your application and you have a better chance. But you can tell them what your theme is, and then if you're awarded the grant, then we just have to have the artwork approved by the mural committee. The other thing that that works in our favor that we've learned about is that once you have your budget set and you know that you've been awarded the grant, you put out a call for artists, and then you let artists come to you for whatever's within your budget, and they tell you how much they can do and what their idea would be. We have not gotten a formal recommendation yet to the council on the theme of the mural, but we've talked about kindness themes or the city's history with either the Bamberger Rail or the orchards, things along those lines. And so we're hoping that we can get the Parks, Trails, Arts, and Rec Community Committee to give us a recommendation so that we can finalize that application and get that sent in. But so tonight we're just asking for approval of the resolution in support of the application.
Thank you. Any questions on this?
No, but I'd love to make this motion. I move the City Council approve resolution 2024-26R, authorizing the submittal of a Discover Davis mural grant application for the installation of a mural in the city and authorizing matching funds.
A second.
Thank you. Let's do a roll call, starting with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, Sherry. Next item is consideration of a motion to authorize the city staff to donate to Bountiful High and Woods Cross High School golf teams. Tyler?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'll kind of show this slide and go through it. My attempts with this request is to really build a relationship between the kids that are at the golf course and Eaglewood, giving them a home to play golf, as well as help the golf teams, both boys and girls, feel a part of Eaglewood. Right now, they're kind of splitting time between Eaglewood, Lakeside, and even Davis Park, Valley View. They'll kind of go around the county, which is not a bad thing. But there's been some, some struggles with getting some of the high school boys in line. I think this will help kind of build that relationship moving forward with the golf course and the high schools and the teams. So essentially, it's my request to authorize giving a donation for them for green fees and range fees during their season. There will be some restrictions on what days and what times. They will only be able to use those for the team practices, so they won't be for any individual players. It will only be during sanctioned practices, and allow both the boys and girls teams to use them in the spring and the fall. So hopefully that's a quick synopsis for you. If there are any questions there.
Any questions for Tyler? Entertain a motion here.
Actually, I do have one question. Okay. This is all an in-kind donation, right?
Yeah, I've requested from both teams and both schools, and they've both schools have agreed to allow us to put some sponsorship banners in the baseball, softball, basketball gyms, and on the football field. So there is some trade, I'd say, but that's more or less to kind of get them to put some skin in the game with this as well, because it is a sizable donation for both teams. I would be surprised if they use up to that amount. That was kind of the maximum what I calculated they would actually use with the limits that I'm going to put on them. They won't be able to play 5 days a week. It'll be, you know, once or twice a week, depending on if they have tournaments or qualifications. But yeah, I would be surprised if they might get to that amount, because it's a sizable donation.
Fantastic idea.
So. I have a question. So the golf team comes and they play, and how much does a game, a day's worth of play equal to? What is that about to?
So I've been charging them what our standard rate for juniors is. So they would be paying 12 and 24, and they would basically be used as an account, and I would still charge them the same junior rate. So I wouldn't discount in our existing rate. I would just charge them what the normal rate would be to reduce what funds they have.
As a dedicated credit in a way, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To my question. So how many rounds do you think they can get in? Because I don't know how big the teams are.
They're going to play from August through October. I think I averaged about one a week, eight players. They're probably going to play under 100 rounds. I would say maybe 80.
That's great.
Per team. So, yeah. You know, 160 for each team. And the reason I included Bountiful is, Mayor mentioned it earlier before the meeting started, that a lot of North Salt Lake kids go to Bountiful, and I didn't want to exclude that team. And I've even been looking at Viewmont potentially maybe for a quest next year, but I wanted to start with both of these teams to kind of get them going and then build the high school and junior golf from there. So,
yeah. I'm actually playing in a tournament tomorrow as a fundraiser for the Bountiful football team. And I'd happy to do that with Woods Cross too if they had one, but they don't. Any further questions for Tyler?
I'll make a motion.
Please.
I move that the City Council authorize city staff to donate golf services and offer a discount on team gear to the Bountiful High School and Woods Cross High School golf teams, which includes up to $2,000 in rounds of golf, $1,000 in range balls, and a 10% discount on team apparel.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Sorry, that was
good. Thank you. That passed. Thank you, Tyler. Next item is consideration of ordinance 2024-04, an ordinance adopting the form of a telecommunications franchise agreement for use between the City of North Salt Lake and all our telecommunication operators.
Thank you, Mayor. This is not a very common item to come before the City Council. I believe that over the course of many, many years, North Salt Lake has entered into franchise agreements with all types of utility providers. This item tonight is for telecommunications providers. And as we looked at a request from a new company, we realized that we have all different forms and types of franchise agreements, and that we really should put the effort into having one franchise agreement for all telecommunications providers, then that would be the same. In the state of Utah, all providers, in fact, I think in the United States, all providers are afforded the same rights as other providers within the community. So I'm proposing that we adopt a new franchise agreement, and I thought that was worth bringing to the city council. Not that we're substantially changing our practices, but the city attorney, Todd Godfrey, has prepared this draft for us, and it's a really terrific form of an agreement. I'll briefly kind of go through it, but that's the purpose of us doing this tonight, is to kind of put a clearer and better franchise agreement together that we can begin to use with all of our franchisees. Of course, our existing and this proposed ordinance, this proposed franchise agreement establishes the right to use city rights of way for telecommunications infrastructure in several locations in the franchise agreement. It commits franchisees to follow all city ordinances related to construction, and we'll talk a little bit about what some of those might be. There's standard indemnification of the city and the city as an additional insured in case we have insurance claims or accidents caused by anybody doing work in our rights of way. This, like our ordinance, allows for relocation of infrastructure at the franchisee's expense in a lot of cases. It also, you may have noticed, discusses ways in which if a third party causes a franchisee to move their infrastructure, that the city would participate in cost recovery, and all those things are appropriate, I believe, in certain circumstances. They're very well defined, so we don't have an obligation necessarily, but we do make a commitment that we will use the city's abilities to cost recover in those cases where perhaps a third party who might be developing property causes a relocation for a franchisee. So this franchise agreement also talks about quarterly meetings with the city, and I would suggest that this is a great change for us. I think meeting more often with companies that are doing construction in the city will be a great thing for us to do. I think, and you would know as well as I know, the complaints that we get from residents are often related to, there's a truck in front of my house, it's cut up my street, it's blocked my driveway, it cut my trees down. And I would say we might be responsible for about half of those problems in the city. It depends on the season. If it's Karen's season, it happens more often to us, like the summer season. But frequently we have private companies in our city doing work in our city, and we receive complaints. And I think this requirement to have quarterly meetings will be a great improvement for all of us. It will protect us. It will protect the franchisees. This is a good requirement. I would expect, and we do this now, but I would expect that we would not have new utility poles anywhere in the city, and we will try very hard to make that requirement and keep that requirement. Again, it has to be the same for all franchisees, and so we'll do that. So continuing, we have a provision where if the city has an emergency, we have the ability to remove quickly infrastructure if we have to. This doesn't happen very often, but it does happen, and it can happen.
And then if a franchisee damages, of course, any city infrastructure, they have an obligation to repair that damage. There's a couple of minor corrections that I wanted to bring to your attention. And they mostly relate to references to the city code. So on page 4, paragraph 3.1, subparagraph A, talks about franchise fees and should be amended to say Title 7, Chapter 8. So it simply has an incorrect reference to a different code, and it should say what it says here. So you see Title 7, Chapter 8, if you're following along that graphic, and then it strikes through in parentheses the municipal telecommunications tax laws, because that's not what we call our code. So we just take that reference out. So that's a minor change. The second minor change in this same section is that wherever it says municipal telecommunications tax laws, I'm proposing that we strike that out and replace it with Title 7, Chapter 8, because we don't, in our adopted ordinance, which this franchise agreement references in several places, we don't call it municipal telecommunications tax laws, and so that needs to be changed. The second minor correction is along in the same vein. It's on page 11, and it also contains an erroneous code number, and so it has to be corrected to Title 7, Chapter 8. So the effect of the ordinance that you'll be adopting tonight is to approve the form of the agreement. All franchise agreements, before they are signed, will come back to the City Council for approval. We don't have authority to sign those on the city's behalf just by adopting this form. The actual agreements will always come back to the City Council. So I think there's a lot of protection here for the council, and I appreciate your consideration of kind of a new way of doing business with the franchisees. I think I would say this again, there are not substantial changes to the way that we operate today, but this franchise agreement will help all of us, including our partner franchisees, to provide better service to the residents and be able to resolve conflicts quicker and with better communication between us. So that's all I had, Mayor, on that item.
Any questions on this? You know, it isn't the franchisees that cause the problems. It's their subcontractors that they bring in.
Also and, true. And,
but my experience is they've been pretty good to correct issues as we go forward.
They didn't do a good job at the mayor's house, though. And that was...
I'm living sorry about it, so...
We're learning, too.
Mayor, I just wanted to... thank Ken and the staff, because I've been really impressed with this really intentional effort that I'm seeing. Maybe it's been very ongoing, but just to standardize everything, to go back through the zoning, to go back through everything and just clean everything up. I just think it's such a better way to run, and I'm just really impressed that you're taking the time and the effort to do that. It's very impressive, so thank you.
Thank you.
Well, once we figured out the correct name of the city and made that change to
I was
all
actually
our
thinking of that, yeah, too. Just standardizing. I like it.
Any other questions?
City del Salt Lake Norte.
Yep.
Something like
so
that.
Cosmopolitan.
Ted, just for that, you can make a motion.
I will if they bring it up on the screen and I can read it.
Okay. It's stuck.
I don't have it.
I'll make
it
a motion.
It would take me a minute. Yeah, please.
I move that the City Council approve Ordinance Number 2024-04, an ordinance adopting the form of a telecommunications franchise agreement for use between the City of North Salt Lake and telecommunications operators as defined by Title 7, Chapter 8 of the City Code.
With amendment.
And as amended.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? Let's do a roll call. Tammy?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, Ken. That passes. Okay, this next item is kind of a bitter pill for me to swallow.
It is. But this item is the consideration of approval of the second boiler at City Hall. This whole subject has a long and painful history for some of us, and it's not funny, though sometimes all we can do is kind of laugh at the situation. This building, the HVAC system of this building, was installed with several design flaws. One of those flaws was that there were two boilers installed in the building, were twice the size that they were supposed to be. And in some ways, you might think bigger is better, and twice the size must work better than the right size, but that's not really true. And so I've learned more about HVAC systems, and I still know nothing hardly at all, except that my office is freezing most of the time, as are other offices in the city. Some time ago, when this was discovered, we had a company, we still have First Service Mechanical, FSM, did a complete overhaul of the HVAC system. We automated many of the parts of the system that helped us with airflow distribution, and I think those things did help. One of the problems we were encountering with the larger boilers is that they were functioning well outside of the temperature range for the entire building, and so they would kick off all the time, they would fault all the time, and one of the boilers actually wore completely out and broke. And that was when we came to the council. I said 2 years in the memo. We actually did that boiler replacement in January of 2023. So I think we started talking about it a few months before then. But we made the decision then at that time to remove the two boilers and install a new boiler, the right size boiler. And that boiler has functioned very well. But the time has really come, and we knew that this time would come where we need to have the second boiler. They work as backup to one another, and that's the right way to run the system. There are other problems with the HVAC system that we are still working to solve. And so I'm sorry to report to you that we haven't solved all the problems. This room seems to be the most comfortable room. Maybe we should all put cubicles in here so we can get out of our offices, because it's either freezing cold, and it used to be hot, but Craig's looking at me like it hasn't been hot for a long time. It's mostly cold. So we are struggling a little bit, but hopefully this will help. The funds for this boiler were adopted in the budget for this year. This is not an emergency expense. We added this to the budget, and so the funds are available. The price is $53,653.32, and we recommend approval at this time.
I guess I just want to say it isn't this building, it's every building, and there's no such thing as a good mechanical engineer, I don't think, anywhere in the world. And so if you have a bright child out there, have them go into mechanical engineering so someone can step up here. Because I've had 100-year-old buildings, and I've had brand new buildings, and they're all terrible. And I don't know the answer, but
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council authorize city staff to purchase a second boiler for the City Hall building from First Service Mechanical in the amount of $53,653.32.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. We are now going to buy another.
Let's spend a lot of money.
And just to that, just to Ken's point, they actually will rotate those like every week, so they'll get more life out of them.
Completely.
Yeah, that's the purpose of having two. But. Next item, consideration of golf equipment purchase.
All right, thank you. So this is a replacement of an existing mower. If you remember, probably a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, I brought to the city council a request to order two new rough mowers that we knew we'd have to replace. They were so far out with COVID that we knew we wouldn't get them for that fiscal year, probably not the last fiscal year, and now it's looking like we wouldn't even get them this fiscal year. So we've had to kind of rethink rather than wait on those existing mowers because we've had such issues with our existing ones. So the original ones were built or purchased in 2014, so they've just about exceeded their lifespan of usable working hours. Right now we have one of them down completely with no issue or with no solution, and we're kind of abandoning the other one through. So we're in need of getting this piece of equipment. The original purchase order that we were going through with Turf Equipment was for, it's called a Groundmaster. They're anywhere from $100,000 to $111,000 per piece of equipment. So this replacement option actually saves us a little money and gives us some usability outside of just being a rough mower for the tractor with snow removal and more of a 12-month operation there. So they brought us a demo unit, so we're actually purchasing that demo unit at a discount as well, so we're saving a little bit there. But this has been good for us, at least through the demo, to cut the rough where we need to cut, and hopefully if you have any questions there, moving forward. So.
Does this come out of the general fund or the golf fund?
Golf fund, yeah. So this is a budgeted item. I had budgeted hoping that we would get the two mowers that I did have on order. And what I'd like to do is keep one of them still on order in hopes that we do get it later this fiscal year, but not likely.
So. Great. Thanks for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Any further question? Motion?
I will make the motion that the City Council approve the purchase of a John Deere tractor and a Trimax pull-behind mower attachment from John Deere Stotts Equipment for $99,676.82.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? Let's start with Tammy.
Aye.
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 Thanks, Tyler. Always good to get money back from our 100 grand, right? Next item is consideration of police vehicle purchase. With Craig.
I guess we can tell it's a new budget year and we're ready to place these orders and get these vehicles purchased.
Burning the hole in your pocket.
It's not burning the hole in the pocket, but if we don't get them ordered and get them coming here, we usually don't get them. So we actually had asked in the budget that was approved for six total vehicles, four of which will be assigned to the patrol division. They are somewhere. They might be somewhere on a mechanical engineer's drawing pad, Mayor. Which means it won't work. But we don't know where they are, but we do have the opportunity to purchase our two unmarked vehicles for our investigations division. These are both replacement Toyota Highlanders, which have been in our fleet. They're the hybrids. And we are proposing to spend $72,591.86 on these two. We're purchasing them off the state bid. On top of that, because they are already in stock and they want to get rid of them, the Young Auto Group, which has one of the contracts for the state, is discounting them each by another $2,000 for these vehicles. They are hybrids and replacing. That's good. I'll hurry and say it while the battery's out. No, they'll be replacing two older vehicles. The money is coming from the Capital Fleet Fund and was approved as part of the budget.
Thank you. Any questions for Chief Black? Motion?
I'll make a motion. I move the City Council approve the purchase of 2 Toyota Highlanders for use in the Police Department Investigations Division.
I'll second.
Thank you. Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
So we might have to watch out for the batteries going dead gag. Looking ahead.
I think this building was built on an old burial site.
Haunted building. We do have the Ghostbusters car in our city. We could call on that, but it's not in the budget, I don't think. John Rueckert, you want to spend the money too, huh?
Yes, I have a few items here. So the first one is a replacement of a 2005 RAV4 with a new 2024 RAV4. The current vehicle that we're replacing meets the 15-point replacement policy, and this is on state contract pricing available through Young Automotive Group. The nice thing about this vehicle is it is on the lot, and it can be purchased, so we don't have to order it and have, you know, wait 10 months or however long things are. We're still waiting for trucks that we ordered last spring, so that's crazy. But yes, there's the price is $30,987.
Questions? Motions?
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve the purchase of a 2024 Toyota RAV4 Hybrid from Young Automotive Group for $30,987.
I'll second it.
Let's start with Tammy.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is Public Works snow removal equipment.
All right. So this equipment is a skid-mounted equipment that is set up for anti-icing. Anti-icing is a practice of putting liquid de-icer down, which in our case we use brine. On the roadway, you can put brine down on the road up to like 7 days before a storm and still have it be effective at keeping the snow and ice from bonding to the pavement. So this will give us better capabilities of trying to be proactive in storms. Currently, all of our trucks, or a lot of our trucks, have brine pre-wet, so it pre-wets the salt as it comes out of the truck. That's been very effective at as we de-ice and putting it on the road during the storms. It doesn't work too well if you're trying to use that to anti-ice because the granular material just bounces off the road and ends up all in the gutter quite readily after traffic runs over it, so on dry pavement. This equipment is going to be used on our hook lift truck, so that it gets changed out. We have different implements for that hook lift truck, dump bed. There's a granular salter bed that goes on there too, as well as a big dumpster that we haul around stuff. So, and this equipment is from Owen Equipment for $36,048. And there's a picture of the truck that it will go on right there. So.
So, let me ask a question. So the equipment that we're buying, is it the container that holds the de-icing material?
Yes.
It's not this truck, it's just that?
Yeah, it's just the container. So
got it. Okay.
It was like that on that truck right there, just on the back. But it'll be set up so we can offload it really easily with this truck.
So. Out of curiosity, does Bountiful use this de-icing material?
Bountiful's actually come over and looked at our brine setup. They have some of their trucks set up to use pre-wet, but as far as I know, I think they might have gotten a system, but I don't know for sure. I don't know if they're using anti-ice though. The UDOT uses it a lot.
I'll make a motion.
Thank you.
I move that the council approve the purchase of a Veritex skid-mounted anti-ice snow removal equipment from Owen Equipment for $36,048.
I'll second.
Thank you. Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Next item is a Public Works excavator trailer.
All right, so the primary use of this trailer is to move our large excavator around. The picture on the left is our current trailer. The axles broke on this like 2 weeks ago as they were coming off of Eagle Ridge Drive and turned onto Highway 89. They just completely snapped off. Luckily, nobody was hurt and we didn't really damage anything other than the trailer was damaged. The new trailer that we want to get has enough capacity to hold this excavator in addition to like our largest pieces of equipment, so we could haul of our loader around with it as well. And this new trailer is available for purchase right now through Redding Truck Equipment for $57,675.
So was this kind of an unexpected expense?
We were planning on replacing this trailer anyways. We had built it in the budget. We just weren't planning on the axles snapping off. And it was kind of untimely because we actually used this large trailer to haul a lot of stuff up for like our Liberty Fest. And we were trying to find a place to rent one from, and nobody really rents a trailer like this. It's like either small gooseneck trailers or ones that go on a large semi-truck, but we don't have capacity, we don't have capability to pull those kind of trailers.
Yeah. I just was wondering, is this one of these cases where it doesn't make sense to fix it because of how old it is?
Yeah, it's, I think what year this is, like a 2013 or something trailer. It's really old and it was past its lifespan, so.
I just wanted the Paul Harvey end of the story. So what did you do?
Oh, what did we do? So we offloaded the excavator and then we used a backhoe to hold up the back end of the trailer, and we just drove it back to the shop, hooked up to the truck and the backhoe holding it up. And then we parked the excavator down by Hatch Park near the job site at 150 North. And then that night, the top of the line at Gary Way blew apart and we had to walk that excavator all the way up the hill. Because we had no way to transport it, so they drove it for over an hour to get it up to Gary Way. And we had to do that twice because it broke twice up there. So.
Wow.
You walked an excavator up?
Well, that's what you call it. We just crawled it with the tracks. We just had to, that's like 5 miles
I'm like, what are these heroes here? Yeah.
I mean, Marvel we're strong, Comics. We're not that strong. Yeah, like, who needs a trailer if these guys can just pick it up and move it, right?
Exactly. Impressive, very impressive.
And that's the rest of the story.
There you go.
It was a good one.
Good day.
So, you can kind of see where the axle snapped off in that picture there, and the tires just laying up there on the deck of the trailer.
I will make a motion.
Thank you.
That the City Council approve.
City Council approve the purchase of the 2023 VersaMax 60,000-pound. Rated tilt deck trailer from Redding Truck Equipment for $57,675. And the price is right.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Tammy. We'll start with you.
Oh, aye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, John. Oh, we have a 3 purchase limit.
I didn't get the last one free.
All right.
Buy in bulk.
Go ahead.
All right. So this is item is for a forklift to replace our used refurbished 1990s forklift. I wasn't sure what year it was even built in, but we bought it used from a company that refurbished them, and it's now showing its age even after being refurbished. We fixed the motor in it several times just recently to keep it running. It's a very useful piece of equipment around our building to move heavy items and stack things on the shelves down there in our warehouse. A little bit underrated for what we use it for. This new forklift is just slightly bigger. It has a 5,000-pound capacity, and the forks will open up a little bit wider, which is good for us to move some stuff around that we currently can't. This is on a state purchasing contract through Wheeler Machinery for $45,903, and this will be purchased out of the Fleet Machinery and Equipment GL line. The next item is a skid loader, and the primary use for this will be on the water construction sites. It's a track skid loader with an enclosed cab. It's better for the operator using implements, especially if you, when they use the brush to clean up the job site, the open cab just pretty much throws all the dirt back on the operator. And they're really terrible to drive when you do that. So, and this is also on a state purchasing contract through Wheeler Machinery, the same contract number for $79,980 that we've purchased through the water fund.
How do the, so I always see the Bobcat around. How does this compare to that?
They're pretty comparable. So.
Are they? Same, roughly the same price, same quality?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question. You've mentioned this maybe three times now. It's under a state purchasing contract. Please explain that.
So the state of Utah collects bids for different equipment items that they need. And then we can buy those items through the city for the same price that the state's negotiated. Most of the time, it's a lot cheaper than what they're selling it for if we were just to go and ask them for the purchase price. So sometimes dealers can beat the state contract price, but most of the time the state contract price is the best one.
And we're free to use the state contract, or if we find a better deal, ignore it.
So. I think this is a great idea, but I'd like to drive the Heister first before we make this. The test run on the Heister. Yeah, don't you think we all should do that?
Sure.
We can get you forklift certified there.
I actually was thinking we should have some kind of like a, not fashion show, but some kind of like with all these new equipment and show us how they all work.
Yeah, it sounds like May Day in Russia, doesn't it?
So. I'll tell you, when we bought that new big snowplow, these guys were so proud. It was just, they took it to the car show, you know, to show it off.
And these are all, these were already in the budget, correct?
Yes.
I had one child who, by the end of every day at the beginning of each month that he got his allowance, gone. It's feeling reminiscent.
Yeah. We still have allowance left, so.
Term just started.
Here we're not going to spend it all today.
Okay, good. Well, I'll make a motion if
Thank
we're
you.
Ready. I move that the City Council approve the purchase of a 2023 CAT GP25N5 forklift and a 2024 CAT 255 C3H2 tracked skid loader from Wheeler Machinery for $125,883.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 All right, thank you.
All right,
and I will point out that a member of our city is one of the owners of Wheeler, so we're helping out people. Okay, thank
Mayor,
you.
Mayor, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What happens to the surplus? Do people buy those and use them for their personal farms
I wondered,
or something?
So we're headed to that discussion here, but I was wondering that about the golf equipment. I mean, how... Is there, does West Bountiful Golf Course buy your bad mower? And
so I have a few surplus items today, and generally we will ask the companies we're purchasing from to give us a trade-in value for the pieces of equipment. So the two fairway mowers, the rough mower, the two tee mowers that I did a couple council meetings ago that we purchased on the lease, and that's some of the things we're surplusing today. They basically didn't want. They gave us a value for that was, I would say, borderline just evil. It was, they gave us a price that they didn't want it for, essentially. So most of them
value.
Will do and will send us an auction. Others will piece out to kind of keep
Smith
others
and
functioning and going. So, and one of them is basically worth more as junk than it is as a piece of equipment. So. The golf course side, we've had some well-used and well-loved pieces of equipment that have 10-plus years that really have 8 years of lifespan on them. So, I have two, so the two greens mowers, two fairway mowers, and the Sand Pro on my list of things to surplus that we've already purchased for, that were on the lease agreement a couple council meetings ago. And I think, John, do you have anything to surplus, or was it just my stuff?
Yeah, okay. John has three pieces of equipment.
But the two greens mowers we're going to repurpose as rollers, so we don't have to change equipment so often. The two fairway mowers and the Sand Pro we're going to attempt to send to auction to get hopefully a little bit more out of auction than we would have trade-in wise. So,
any questions? John, do you want to walk us through your equipment?
So yeah, we're surplusing the 2005 RAV4, the broken trailer, and the forklift. So
we'll throw in an extra tire, just
yeah.
As okay. Any questions on any of this? Motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2024-27R declaring surplus property and authorizing its disposal.
Second.
Thank you. Let's start with Tammy.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Next item is a consideration of Resolution 2024-27R, resolution. Oh no, that's one we just did, sorry. Ken, the discussion of Liberty Fest 2024.
Thank you, Mayor. Craig and I had a little different experience at Liberty Fest this year than a lot of people. And we sort of, well, not sort of, we feel a duty to have a discussion with the council about some of the negative things that are happening at Liberty Fest, at the fireworks show. 2 years in a row now, we've had people hospitalized. I've invited Craig to kind of get more specific with you. As we have thought about and discussed how the event has changed over the years, I think the city has been extremely well-intentioned in providing a wonderful celebration, an Independence Day celebration that means a lot to all of us. We have a lot of history with this event. To me, it's really unfortunate and sad that we have dangerous behavior happening at the event now that we certainly did not intend to have or intend to create a space or a location for that. There are some reasons why. And before I turn it over to Ted, you can speak if you want, but Craig's prepared to speak. Sorry about that. I would just say this. We had a discussion this morning in our staff meeting. We have a Tuesday staff meeting. And Linda Horrocks reminded us that, who's been here forever, reminded us that in the first, one of the very first fireworks shows, she located an advertisement for it. And it said, bring your family and your blanket to the golf course at 6:30 for a celebration and fireworks. And that's really not the event that we have today. And again, I think the city has been extremely well-meaning in its efforts to create a wonderful event. And people say that it's the most wonderful event of the summer for them. You know, it's on par with
the Sugar House fireworks show, or even the Freedom Festival, which, and it's different because we don't have a stadium, but you know, people have very fond feelings and they have traditions with their families, and it's a wonderful thing. I think recently adding food trucks, bounce houses, and putting the event on Eagle Ridge Drive the way we have has really created a physical environment that has allowed folks from all over the Wasatch Front, youth who are there not to really enjoy the event, but to be disruptive and to be, well, anyway, I'll let Craig take over because I won't say it right. But we just felt a duty to have a discussion with the council about this. And we don't have to make any decisions tonight, but you should know that we have some, we have an element of the population that's coming into North Salt Lake on July 3rd that is a harmful and unsafe element. And so having said that, I will
Do we need to go into closed session on this because it's a security issue?
We're not really going to be talking about security measures, I don't think. Todd, I don't know. Do you have an opinion on that?
I think you just answered that question.
Yeah.
So. Okay. I don't know how specific the chief can get. But
if we do want to talk about security measures, we can go into closed session.
Okay.
At some point during the discussion, okay. If you wish to talk about those things.
I guess the follow-up, is there any pending legal issues that we could... Okay.
No, I don't think so.
Not civil. There's some pending criminal legal issues with people that were arrested this year, but nothing civil that I'm aware of.
Ready? Okay, Craig.
Did Councilmember Knowlton have something? Because even if I am prepared, his unprepared statements are usually better than my prepared.
I just said 10.
Battery's dying.
Any questions? Thank you. Well, Ken is expressing a lot of maybe ill-placed confidence that I'm going to express this the right way, because the week after this, I don't think I was in much of a state of mind to express anything. We started to really see this element become problematic maybe 3 or 4 years ago when we did expand the size and scope of Liberty Fest because it was becoming so well attended. We were, if many of you will remember, we had the food trucks and the booths up on the plaza of the golf course, and it was so crowded there that people couldn't maneuver through to utilize any of those other activities. So again, very well intentioned, I think we decided that we could close off Eagle Ridge Drive and provide, you know, 5 or 6 times the amount of space for these events and these amenities to our Liberty Fest celebration. But I think from a public safety standpoint, I have come to realize the last 3 years, all we have really done is create a carnival-like atmosphere for those who know that they can come and behave really at best immaturely and in some ways very dangerously with almost no repercussions of getting caught. And for 2 years now, we have had issues where people have been hurt by this behavior bad enough that they have had to go to the hospital. This year, we had a situation, and I'll ask, I put just a couple of pictures up here. I know you see this from the balcony, but these are some of the perspectives that we were seeing this year from being in the crowd and above the crowd with the drone, which was immensely helpful for making some of the arrests and helping us get through this crowd at times. But if you could show maybe the one with the very top one, the 200, well, no, that's not even it. I apologize because I just kind of threw these together. This one, photos at time of the assault. So about 9 o'clock, we had a pretty serious fight occur at the south end of this, maybe the south third of this, you're looking south on Eagle Ridge Drive here. And the individual was hurt so badly that he couldn't make it to where the EMTs were staged on either side. As you know, we staged them over by the turf shack. Is that what we call that over there on the south end, Tyler? And then we also have the main medics staged at our command center on the north side in the lower parking lot. He couldn't get there. He had been assaulted in the head. He was dizzy. He wasn't able to walk. And the EMTs could not get themselves with their medical equipment through that crowd. So the police ended up trying to get through there with on foot and in golf carts to pick this kid up and bring him back to the main EMT session, or the main EMT center. Anybody want to guess how long it took us to get, with police officers trying to clear the way, a golf cart to where that second crowd, that second bulk of crowd is? I'm just curious if you even want to take a guess at what that took us. 30 minutes to get back. By the time we got back, it took us almost 15 minutes to get there, find him, get him loaded, and get him back through. And this is with officers trying to yell, clear the way, get out of the way. And fortunately, his injuries were not life-threatening, where he was bleeding or under some sort of other physical duress where he would have, you know, been disabled or even died had we not gotten him more immediate medical attention. But even after that was done, we could not get an ambulance up to the event until after the event was over. That he had to be sat in the ambulance that was up on site, monitored by EMTs during that time. And by the way, this is a juvenile whose parents are being notified of this, and they can't even get there. They can't get to this event. The photo of the maybe the crowd. By
Chief, how did you know to go find him?
We had people calling us. We have a lot of CERT people that also have radios, and they were actually able to say, we've got a fight that's over by these south bathrooms, and we need help. So we did get police officers over there on foot, and they're the ones that said, we need medical over here. This kid can't walk on his own to be taken over. So that is one of the problems. And as you can see, there's really just no good way. The place that might look like on the green grass, as you know, is a 45-plus degree hill. We can't move even small golf carts across. We can get our bikes through there, and we can get through there on foot. But we can't maneuver any real equipment or ways to transport people. Earlier in the night, when it was about this time, we found some kids selling drugs and passing alcohol around. And we lost them several times in the crowd. In fact, later that night, there was a pretty serious accident on Eaglewood Drive where a 14 and a 15-year-old had come to the event from the West Valley area, gotten drunk at the event, and they'd taken their parents' car without permission, and they'd hit three cars coming down Eaglewood Drive, which, again, contributes to some of our traffic problems that we didn't even know were going on at the time. Both of them were arrested for DUI because they switched places in the car when they got disabled and realized, hey, we can't go anywhere, so they switched over. But this is a 14-year-old and a 15-year-old. And the reason I share that story is we were able to identify just a couple of situations where people were bringing in containers that were full of alcohol. We saw several drug deals occur. We did arrest one individual for participating in that behavior, but the others we couldn't even find, but we could see them happening and going on. The fireworks issue, again, was a problem this year with not the great fireworks that we go to see, but the illegal fireworks, and these are not just little firecrackers or poppets. These are M80s. These are explosives that injured that girl last year. They're so blatant about this in the crowd that as the officers are walking through looking for them, they're setting them off just 3 or 4 feet behind the officers to distract them, to essentially taunt them. And the crowd's too big to even identify who it is. We had video on a closer level than this from above, and even with the above look, we could not tell which kid was setting off those fireworks. We could identify the group and go try to spread them up and move them around, but there's not enough for a criminal charge when you can't actually identify the person that's doing it. You can't charge a group for the behavior of one in this kind of situation. So I've talked to some of my other peers in the county. I understand that Clinton this year, and I think even last year, completely did away with their event because of the violence and the bad behavior that was occurring. Some cities are ramping it up in a new way, and I don't know why. The city of Farmington this year brought in a full carnival, and they had very similar situations. Where they have their event, there's a lot more space to be spread out, and they also have nowhere near the level of attendance that we have. Chief Stone told us in staff meeting that he went to the West Bountiful event, and that event has traditionally just been, you know, a few hundred people. And this year, it was well over 1,000 people. It started to show these same types of dynamics with people coming in from out of the city that really are just there to disrupt and to misbehave. And Centerville's event was not quite the level of problems that we had, but still the same way. And their events are getting this big also. I've always really enjoyed Liberty Fest. I think it's a great event, and I think it's reflected well on what we do as far as the patriotism of the residents of this city, the unity of this city. It brings many of our residents together, and even I think residents from the Bountiful and Woods Cross area. But in 1994, when I was fairly early in my career, I also used to work at West Fest in West Valley City, and this is the same kind of crowd that we found. And every year we saw the violence becoming more and more blatant, and by 1994, it was 94, 95, it escalated to where we had a shooting there. And luckily the kid didn't die that year, but the police department in the city completely had to rethink how West Fest was being conducted. And it was no longer an open-air, carnival-like atmosphere where anything goes. I don't know how many of you, I know a lot of the council members helped people up the hill in the golf carts, but how many kids did you see in golf carts? Driving around crazy on these little zippy motorbikes going everywhere, no helmets. There's another picture that I found of probably the ingress, one or two. So this is just a slight picture of, you know, the level of ingress. There's 40 or 50 people in just this one moment, and lines of cars on Eagle Ridge Drive coming south. And this is before the event. I think it's pretty easy to understand why we couldn't get ambulances other than what was already there up there, why we couldn't get additional help. And from a police department standpoint, I really don't think we would need additional help. We have every officer except the two or three that are on regular duty up there. We don't let anybody have time off for this event. But the fire department could need some help. They have a brush truck and a fire vehicle, but if there was a significant medical event and a fire, I was talking to Chief Stone, and he said, I don't know how we would get him up here. Like I said, we couldn't get an ambulance up there till after the show was over. Kind of a side issue is just the ongoing egress of this situation. It takes hours, and I received calls, I received texts about what's going on. We found out later on that there was an accident over on Summerwood Drive in Bountiful. It was just a property damage accident, but that clogs up one of the three exits of this event. But if you were to go down to Highway 89, you would see cars exiting out like a broken dam. They're just flowing out. We open up all the streets. We open up the lights. We take over the red lights and just let people out. But at the top of the event, the reason this takes hours for people to get out of here is they're letting each other turn around, and these are our main streets. Think of the side streets. If you look in the upper right-hand corner, that's Clubhouse Court. How many people are up there that are going to have to be let in somewhere on Eagle Ridge Drive to get out of there? And I think it's somewhat miraculous we get these people out of there in a couple of hours. So I have some thoughts and some suggestions I've shared with Ken about, you know, downsizing this event at Eaglewood Golf Course. The infrastructure of our city is just not built for this. I think it's evolved into something beyond what we intend for our city. What are we really trying to accomplish here? And I'm glad we're having this discussion before we debrief it with those volunteers that just do such a great job to help us. They're wonderful people, and they want to build the reputation of the city. But if we get into a situation where someone's seriously injured or dies because of a public safety issue, we couldn't get them medical help, they were injured in an act of violence, we're going to undo 20 years of good reputation and get a very bad reputation that this now becomes something like the State Fair or West Fest or things like that. So with that in mind, I appreciate Councilmember Watts Baskin's suggestion that we maybe at some point do talk about security. And I think that would be a great discussion to have in or out of closed session. I don't think we have super secret ideas, but added security
is added cost, and we already struggle to direct as much money as we can to make this a great fireworks event. But it's more of a policy decision from this body. What do we want this to be, and where are we really taking it? Because I've always enjoyed it, but the last 2 years, I've got to tell you, I've gone home very discouraged about where this is going from a public safety standpoint.
So, Craig, what did Westfest end up doing?
They ended up moving the entire event to what was then Granger Park, which is right on the corner, was on the corner of 35th South and 36th West. They still allowed the carnival in, but then they brought in fencing, and you could only get in through a couple of entryways, and your bags were checked, your backpacks were checked. You weren't allowed to bring coolers in because it wasn't an event where there were fireworks. So they would just come in and go to the booths or go to the City of Fun Carnival. So coolers and those things were not allowed at all. But you couldn't just walk in off of any of a 4,000 or 5,000 linear feet and be in the event. You had to go to an entrance. And then it closed at 10 o'clock every night. It was done.
Mayor, I'd make a motion that we go into closed session, discuss security issues and questions that I'd like to ask.
I'll second that.
It's a roll call. Okay. Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 All right, we're going into closed session.
Question on sugar.
We'll need just a minute.